We've been sold the idea that financial independence is all about some number on your account statement. Or even worse, that you don't qualify because of where you started out. That's just not true. It's not about some well-kept secret of the wealthy. It's about finding the right information and knowing how to apply it. On the Get Ready for the Future show, we're answering your questions so you can start making real financial change today. The journey to true financial independence begins right here, and it starts with you.
Here to help people discover, protect, and share true financial independence. Welcome in to the Get Ready for the Future show, whether you're watching us online, on podcast, or on radio. My name is Scott Inman, and we are so glad that you gave us a few minutes of your time. We'll be answering your questions on the show today. John Shrewsberry is with me just a moments from now. But as we get things teed up today, John, and we look at the questions that we're going to be talking about, we're going to see some very specific questions revolving people's personal financial circumstances, but it is a very isolated question, and they want larger answers from it. And I think that's what stands out this week for me, is we kind of dive in and get folks in the mindset of what we're going to be talking about. There really has, I won't say infinite, but there are so many possibilities when you're putting together a financial plan that have to be considered. There are variables that have to be considered. And when we answer these questions and we address these questions to the best that we can and talk about that, I think people need to realize that, you know, retirement's not a number. It's not a financial number. It's not an asset number. It's an income problem.
It is. It's a very much an income problem, and we focus on that all the time. And you kind of alluded to this, Scott, but details matter.
Yeah.
And I was leading a team meeting the other day, and I was talking to our team, and I said, look, guys, we have to dig deep into the details, because it is in the details that the little nuances that make a big difference show up. And so that's where a lot of our questions land today.
Yeah, and sometimes the answer is black and white, and sometimes it's a little more, we need more information to be able to determine what that answer is. So that's kind of the jumping off point. And if you have a question, we're going to tell you right off the top of the show to go ahead and call or text them in to us at 501-381-5228. You can leave a voicemail or you can text to that number. Either way, and we'll answer your questions on the air in upcoming shows. You can also send us an email. You can send that to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Nothing's off base. Any topic you want to talk about, financially speaking, when it comes to retirement, investing, Social Security, pensions, whatever you want to talk about, whatever's on your mind as you are in this journey to true financial independence, we exist as a firm and as a Get Ready for the Future show program to really help people discover, protect, and share true financial independence. So first up today, it's Grant from Bryant. And Grant writes, I'm 55 with $650,000 saved for retirement. Do I need to max out catch-up contributions, or will I be okay holding steady with my normal contributions? Grant, thanks for the question. You're 5 years into being able to make those catch-up contributions. So let's define that really quickly for people. We never want to assume that in the question that is asked, everybody listening or watching understands fully what they're even talking about. So what is a catch-up contribution? Well, the limits as we go into 2024 for 401k contributions or employer plan contributions, the limit is $23,000 for the annual amount if you are under 50 years old. But the government allows for you to put more in. It's called a catch-up contribution, understanding that when you reach 50 years old, you are trying to catch up or have the opportunity, if you're behind on your retirement savings, to catch up so you can actually save an additional $7,500. So this is a big question from Grant, because we're talking about to add $7,500 to your retirement savings through your employer plan, or to not do that. And you can do that, by the way, just to, for a little clarity too, the year you turn 50. So if you're actually 49 right now and your birthday is in June of 2024, you can actually make those catch-up contributions in calendar year 2024. So Grant asked, John, is it okay to not do that? And I think, you know, when he says, will he be okay? That's what I focus in on, is I don't think that our clients want to be just okay in retirement.
They want more than that. They want excellence in retirement. They want to be able to live financially independent. Grant, you go ahead and make those catch-up contributions, because in my 30-plus years of helping people to run toward financial independence and build up their retirement savings, I have never had somebody show up and say, you know what, I just saved too much for retirement.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all this money. Now, are there people that have more money than they will spend? Sure. But nobody regrets saving more for retirement. Look at it this way. You get to deduct that off of your total income, so you're not taxed on that money, and you have a larger nest egg. So come what may, you're building in some safety and security for yourself in retirement. To his point, Scott, whether he needs to do this or not is a question that really can only be answered by sitting down with an advisor and running the numbers, as we call it, looking at where he's at right now, what has he accumulated for retirement, and then what does his income need? Because as we said earlier, retirement is an income issue, not an asset issue. Now, the assets drive income to some extent, but you have to know what you're shooting for in order to be able to hit the target.
Yeah, I think we've used these analogies before, but the general problem with worrying about one piece of it without even understanding the rest of it is really where the plan comes into play and draws a clearer vision, because he's worrying about contributions without knowing where we're even headed, where the end destination is. When are you going to retire? How much income are you going to need when you get there? That determines the asset level that you're going to need to reach, and then you can back into the contribution rate. You know, you think about taking a trip, Grant. If you're taking a small trip or a large trip, vacation, let's say you're going to the beach for the summer, you wouldn't take that trip just randomly starting to take off out of your driveway and go, I wonder if I turn left, will I get there? You'd have a roadmap. You'd have your GPS. You'd have some destination entered into a computer program, or if you're old school, you're carrying the Atlas. Whatever the case may be, you're thinking about your final destination and what it's going to be like to get there, when you're going to get there, when you're going to want to get there before you ever make that first left. And I think worrying, John, about catch-up contributions in a vacuum is kind of the same way.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, you know, this whole idea of the mindset of someone. If you're going to be financially independent, you have to think differently. You have to stop thinking like the average guy. If you take a look at the statistics, about 20% of the people actually have a very clear written financial plan, and they're on track for retirement and all that. 80% of the people are just kind of wandering in the wilderness, so to speak. And so if you're going to be different, you have to act differently. You can't follow what the crowd does, the 80% rule. You can be like those folks, and you can be maybe not financially independent, but those that are financially independent, in most cases, they have constructed a well-thought-out retirement income plan, and they're living a life that they have dreamed of. They have all their needs taken care of with their required income amount that is coming in, plus they have other investments that allow them to do their wants and their wishes above and beyond those basic needs. That is financial independence.
So let's talk about, just to wrap up this question, Grant, I would encourage you to put a full, complete retirement income plan together to know where those answers are, when your retirement age occurs, how much income you want, where your asset level will be. And it is possible that you don't need the catch-up contributions to achieve financial independence. There may be other ways or other places that you might want to think about diverting money as you lead up in your pre-retirement years. Maybe there's debt we need to take care of. Maybe there's other things, other places that that money can go. But to John's point, getting more money into a tax-deferred growth vehicle, such as the employer-sponsored plan is always a good idea, because even if you have overfunded retirement, even if you're going to be okay, or even if you're going to be better than okay, there are always things to look out for ahead down the retirement road, which things like health care, things like long-term care. So you really can never have too much money for retirement.
Or if you're even charitably minded, you might want to do some qualified charitable distributions later in life that go to a 501c3 nonprofit organization that you feel strongly about. There's lots of options when you have the money. You have very little options if you don't have the money.
So this is our question of the week. We want to congratulate Grant and thank you for reaching out with your question. We would love to send you a Get Ready for the Future Show tumbler, but to claim it, we just need to know where to send it. And by that, you can send send an email to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. John is modeling like Vanna White over here on our live stream for the Get Ready for the Future show tumbler. They let us drink out of one, and then they take it away as soon as the show's over.
That's right. We don't get to keep them.
We didn't have the question of the week, but Grant did. So if you have a question, call or text them to us at 501-381-5228 to hear your question answered on the air, or send us an email. Send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com, just like Hank from Jonesboro did. That's our next question. When retiring, there is always the idea of not working at all. I'd like to retire, but keep working, maybe part-time teaching law school. Would something like this be good to make up for lower savings? Thanks, Hank, very much. Absolutely, that would be good. We don't know what your savings situation is, but certainly deferring taking from those savings and earning income to push that down the road can be a great idea. On the surface, that's the easy financial answer. But really, if we go deeper, there's a lot of other reasons this could be very good for Hank.
Scott, I don't know if we actually coined the phrase or if we borrowed it from someone many years ago, but the phrase is worktirement. It is a blending of work and retirement, exactly what Hank is talking about here. We believe that there's great benefit both financially and psychologically in some type of work going on as you fade into retirement. If you kind of think about the difference between the light switch that you have in your house, it's either off or on, or a dimmer switch where you can go from no light all the way to full volume light, or somewhere in between. That somewhere in between is what we call worktirement. And I think, Scott, that has some economic benefits that we can actually enumerate. Number one is it gives you a lot of latitude where Social Security is concerned.
Yeah, you can delay your Social Security benefit. And certainly if you're, we don't know what age Hank even is, but certainly if you're not full retirement age, you're going to probably want to do that anyway if you're going to continue to work, because as we've talked about on the show before, there are income limits. In other words, you can only make so much earned income while claiming your Social Security benefit if you take it early. And again, we don't know how old Hank is, but that is a consideration for anybody who even is thinking about continuing to work. I've had discussions just this week with two different clients talking about that. Decisions over, they're about to turn 62, which is the earliest they can claim their Social Security benefit. And they're considering whether they should claim it or not. And that's one of the considerations. They're maybe going to work a little bit, and they're not sure how much income they're going to take. That's probably a good reason to hold off on taking it anyway. But from Hank's perspective, if you are delaying your Social Security benefit, you're letting it grow, because your full retirement age benefit is a certain number. So let's say it's $1,000. If you take it early, it's going to be less than that. And if you take it later, if you can delay it all the way up to 70, it's going to grow by 8% per year. So you're going to get a larger benefit, which again, John, I think that's kind of a compounding effect on taking the pressure off of Hank's savings. If you can make employment income, even some, and not take as much or any from your assets, that gets you to a larger Social Security benefit, which continues to allow you to take less or very maybe not any from your assets.
It's amazing, Scott, that this is like almost like a jigsaw puzzle, or more appropriately, do you remember the puzzles that you used to have that was came in a little square box and you had to move the parts around trying to make a picture or whatever mm-hmm. the case
yep.
may be?
Yep.
And it was so frustrating. You'd get all the way down to one and you couldn't get it done.
Yep.
This is how retirement income planning is. It's what we do every day here at GenWealth. It is a puzzle that we solve on a regular basis for our clients. And there's a lot of confusion about this whole Social Security thing and how work interplays with that. This is what we do for a living, and we can help you navigate that puzzle, help you to solve that puzzle so it comes out in the best interest of you and your future. Now, that's the financial side of it. Let's talk for a few minutes about the psychological effects of this. This slow fade into retirement, frankly, allows you to not have the sudden jolt of going from full tilt in work mode to going home and having no schedule whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You actually have the continued socialization. You have a pattern of life that you are kind of easing into. It really has great benefits. If you think about it, most of us would probably say, if I had to stop and go home to my spouse has been, you know, running the house all this time, and she has her routine. If I come in there and I muck that up in some way, shape, form, or fashion, then we're going to be probably at odds and retirement's not going to be very happy. So you have to think about how that personal aspect of that and that social interplay, not only with the spouse, but also your workmates, the people that you work with. If you can find a way to go part-time, still have those relationships, or maybe even go find some new relationships at a part-time job as opposed to a full-time job, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and John, I think too, a big part of this for Hank and for anybody who's considering doing some type of part-time work as they ease into retirement is it keeps your mind sharp. You know, when you're not thinking on a daily basis cognitively, you can potentially accelerate that cognitive decline. And certainly that could be good for your mental health to continue to get to work on some level and ease into retirement. You know, we have clients here, and that's not to say people can't do a full stop. We have all kinds of clients. We have people that have no problem walking away from the job they're in and completely not worrying about making any income. But in most cases, if not all, they still have purpose. They have something they are retiring to. And that's one thing that we talk about. We've used this line before. You have to retire to something, not from something. We know a lot of people who are really disgusted and disheartened about their current employment situation, and they just want to get out as soon as they can. But and that's fine if they're financially prepared to do it, but they have to be mentally prepared to do it as well.
Yeah, Scott, on a personal note, you know, I take a lot of grief around here that you guys are going to tote me out one day because I'm, you know, getting older and you don't see me leaving work. I will tell you that I don't know much that I do that I enjoy more than my work. I enjoy things that, you know, you and I go do together from time to time, go to football games, go to concerts, things of that nature. But there's only so many of those that you can go to.
Right.
And so what occupies the rest of your time and what gives you that fulfillment? I find fulfillment in what we do here at GenWealth for our clients and how we lead our team and all of the things that we do as a team here at GenWealth. If you are fulfilled in something, nothing says you have to step totally away from that. You can ease into retirement and do a work retirement sort of slow fade into it if that is what you need to do. But I know people that have worked into their 80s and they've been very, you know, active. It's not drudgery. It's not because they have to. It's because they really enjoy it. If that's your purpose, then find a way to do that fade into retirement. Maybe slow down a little bit. I've done that to some degree. You're going to slow down a little bit, but you don't have to turn the light switch completely off.
Yeah, and I'd say this to wrap up, to talk to Hank and anybody else who's just like Hank, wondering about, okay, I want to get out of this full-time work. I'd like to do maybe a little part-time work. Maybe I want to see how much I have to make in that part-time. That's the great thing about the GenWealth Ready to Retire process. When you're building a retirement income plan, you can plug in any source of income. So what we can do here is to create a plan that shows you where your assets are, combine that with the income needs and desires you have when you are no longer making income at all, and show you where gaps may lie, right? Like, let's say, just to throw some numbers out there, maybe you'd like to have $6,000 a month in retirement income from assets and also from Social Security, all sources. And that $6,000 a month, your assets are not going to support that if you retire today. But to Hank's point, we could come back and tell Hank how much he needs to make, because he tells us he has potentially lower savings. So we could plug in that gap. Maybe his assets currently will allow him to make $4,000 a month, or get $4,000 a month in retirement income. So then there's $2,000 a month, and we could tell him, hey, if you can go out and teach law school and make $2,000 a month, that would be a great bridge into retirement.
Absolutely. And I think that you have to think about how that is going to plan out. There's a lot of implications there. You know, we haven't talked about health insurance. If the part-time work at the college allows you to have health insurance coverage, that's great. I don't know what kind of experience you've had at teaching law school, but there may be a pension associated with that if you work X number of years. Those are all factors that you've got to think through and be guided through by someone who's been down that road before, and that's the benefit of actually working with an advisor.
Hank, thanks for your question. If you have one, if you're listening to the show today and you just something on your mind that you'd like to ask the financial advisors at GenWealth, just call or text the question to 501-381-5228 or send an email to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Moving on the Get Ready for the Future show today, we've got a question from Justin in Conway. 46 years old. Right now I have just under $500,000 in retirement accounts. Would I be okay in retirement if the only thing I do is max out my Roth IRA every year moving forward? Job offers a very crappy 401k, not mincing words there. No match, index, or target date funds. A lot to unwrap there from Justin. And it's so interesting to me. We have our second question with, will I be okay in retirement? Justin, we want you not to just be okay in retirement. We don't want you to cut corners now or even recognize that you're cutting corners to be okay in retirement. So again, to our point from the first question in the show today, nobody's ever told us they've saved too much for retirement. So be very cautious about pulling back the reins on what you are doing for retirement. But given that 401k description, I think the first thing we can safely say, John, here is that yes, keep maxing out that Roth IRA for a lot of reasons. We love the Roth IRA. For people listening who are not totally familiar with how it works, you're putting in after-tax contributions. They grow tax-deferred and are withdrawn tax-free. You will not pay a dime of tax when you pull the money out of the Roth IRA. And it's also not counted as earned income in retirement, so it can help you on the tax side with your other income as well. So it's a great flexible tool to use in retirement. I believe dumping as much into Roth IRAs is always a good idea, and especially at Justin's age, 46 years old. We don't know when, you're not telling us when you're going to retire, but if it's 15 or 20 years from now, you have a lot of time to really get those Roth IRA balances up. And also, if you have a spouse, he doesn't tell us if he's married, but if you have a spouse and you file a joint tax return, you can open a Roth IRA and contribute to the spouses as well. The contribution limits is kind of where we ought to hang out just a bit, John, because if you are 46 years old like Justin, you're limited a little bit on how much you can get in there.
Yeah, it's $7,000 each person in the household. There is a catch-up contribution, as we were talking about catch-ups earlier in the show on 401ks. On a Roth IRA, the catch-up contribution is $1,000 at age 50 or above. So you've got the opportunity to get somewhere between $7,000 and $8,000 into your Roth IRA, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Scott, I want to go back to the whole thing of, am I going to be okay? Mm-hmm. This whole conversation reminds me of one time a pastor was asked, well, Pastor, do I tithe off of my gross income or my net income? And the pastor replied, well, do you want a gross blessing or a net blessing? I think it's the same thing. You know, you can contribute to your Roth IRA and be okay. And okay is very subjective. But I think that again, you want to try to do as much as you possibly can toward retirement, because there is no life preserver as far as retirement is concerned. Social Security is the only program out there that is some sort of social program that's going to help you out if you haven't saved enough for retirement. There is no student loan for Social Security. That's what I tell clients when they're going, well, do I save for retirement or do I save for my kids' college? And I go, look, there's student loans for college if that's what you have to do. But there is no student loan for retirement. So you've got to save as much money as you possibly can. Now, let's talk a little bit about these target date funds and the question about index funds and all of that. We're not big fans of target date funds because as you get older, they get more conservative, and that may or may not be the right thing for you, but you're totally out of control of those asset allocation percentages when you do a target date fund. Index funds are really popular, but that doesn't mean an actively managed fund is a bad choice. There's a lot of froth out there in the media about, oh, index funds, they're cheap and they perform well and all that type of thing. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. Here is the most important thing. Justin, you need to be doing it. You don't need to be worried about where it's going. Yes, that's important. But the most important thing is that you are engaged in the contributions. I think Dave Ramsey talks about that, like there's some study that's been done that's like 85 or 90% of your ability to be successful in retirement is just pulling the trigger and making the contributions.
Right. Yep. That's a huge part of it. And even with no match, I think, Justin, it's important to remember the 401k still has benefits. The contributions, assuming they are pre-tax, will certainly lower your taxable income. So it's always good, especially if you're maxing out the Roth. There's a little balance, right? You're getting tax-free withdrawals in retirement by funding the Roth, but you're also getting tax benefits now by contributing to the Roth, the 401k. You also have the tax-deferred growth, which can keep taxes off of it when you compare it to, say, a non-retirement account where you'd have to pay capital gains for any sales, any trades you make and gains you have in those type of accounts. So there's still some advantages, even if you don't have investments that you're truly in love with, although, as we've talked about, you might want to consider not being in love with it. You know, I think the one thing about the 401k we talk about all the time is they are great accumulation vehicles. They are not great distribution vehicles. As you get into retirement and you think about the limitations on those funds, but even the target date fund, John, when I hear you talk about how it is on that glide path to be more conservative as you get closer to the date on that target date fund, I think the thing about the 401k is there's so many assumptions that 401k has every dollar you have, right?
Yeah.
They don't recognize any outside accounts you may have, and you may not have any, Justin. It may be all in your 401k. Well, you tell us you have a Roth, so you don't, right? So your complete financial picture should not be determined by what is inside of your 401k. So that's one reason to not get in love with target date funds for sure. And then we asked Justin if he was married, because there's that option too, right? Rather than totally walk away from your 401k and only contribute to your Roth IRA, what about your spouse? Do they have options? Is their 401k a place that you could get a larger match? You have no match, any match, right? You can certainly look to that and see the benefits there and consider that holistically when it comes to your overall plan.
Scott, let me put a cap on this whole discussion. And I'm talking to Justin, and I'm talking to really everybody else out there that has these specific questions about this part or that part. Stop doing things in a vacuum. Mm. You've got to stop doing things in a vacuum, because your financial plan is a intricately woven creation. And it is something that there everything depends on everything else in the plan. So you have to stop doing these one-off isolated things and go, well, what if I do this, will this take me to where I want to go? That's not how this works. Everything has to kind of work together for you to reach financial independence.
All right, moving on to our final question on today's show. It's from Charles via email. He writes, I am 65, wife is 63. I retired in 23, that's 2023. Wife will in 2025. I say draw down her 401k first, but she disagrees. What's the best withdrawal strategy for us? For context, we have $900,000 split 50-50 in Roth and 401k plus pension income and 6 months of an emergency fund. Charles, congratulations on being pretty well prepared to walk into retirement. And your question is where to take it from first. Okay, so if she is still working, because your wife is 63 currently, and she's got a couple of more years here, or I guess one more year. It's hard to believe 2025 is only 1 year away. So next year is her projected retirement date, and you're already retired, and we're not incredibly sure if you're saying you want to withdraw today or after she retires, but it could be complicated to try to be pulling from her 401k while she's still working.
Yeah, she's putting money into their 401k, and you're thinking about withdrawing. That doesn't work, and there's a lot of complexity there. You can technically take money out after 59 and a half, but I've never seen a systematic withdrawal going on after 59 and a half while someone's still working. The mechanisms just aren't there to do that. I think that from a tax standpoint, there's a lot of opportunities here, Scott. And I think that it should not be one of these situations that we have his and hers.
Yeah.
It's our retirement. It's not his retirement and her retirement. It's our retirement. So I think you have to look at this holistically. And so blending those Roth and 401k monies in a income stream could make a lot of sense, because the Roth influences how much or how little your Social Security is taxed. And so there could be some strategies that you apply early in retirement and maybe not so much later in retirement to relieve some tax burden, depending on whether you still have any deductions on your 1040 form and all of that type of thing. So it's a very complex thing. And when you're taking Social Security, if you're drawing income from a taxable 401k, all of that goes into the tax mix. And so you're paying taxes on everything.
Yeah.
The Roth actually relieves some burden. It lessens the calculation on the Social Security, and you don't pay any tax on the Roth income. So there's a lot there, Scott, that needs to be kind of dealt with. It's really in the weeds, but I think that the caution that I would have here is watch out for some unintended consequences.
Yeah, I think that's a big key, especially when he tells us that he has $900,000 split between the Roth and the 401k, 50-50. You know, it is rare that we have a Roth balance that high. So if you have enough Roth dollars to sustain a mix of withdrawals between the traditional 401k and the Roth 401k, that can matter for sure on the tax side of things. And then, you know, John said, talked about thinking about it as not his and hers, but ours. You know, people do come in to our office and begin to plan their retirement, and their money is in his 401k and a her 401k. And many times we're talking about the options for them to roll that over into an IRA. There are options for that along with leaving it there. Or if you're going to another job, you could potentially take it to your employer. You could also cash it out, or you could roll it to an IRA. There are pros and cons with each of them. But if the decision is made to roll into an IRA, our clients will often ask, can we put it all in one pot, right? Can we just put it all in there and take it out of it? You can't do that. You do have to keep the account separate. If it is an IRA, that I stands for individual. So you have to keep an individual registration on it. So there will be multiple accounts, even if you choose to blend it. But I think that doesn't mean you have to drain one account completely before accessing the other.
You're absolutely right, Scott, that there are multiple accounts for, you know, husband and wife, and you may have Roth and traditional and all those things, but you have to plan holistically. When we do a retirement income plan through the Ready to Retire process, the first thing that we do is say, okay, what total amount of assets are we working with, husband and wife together? How do we look at this as a whole, not his and hers? There's a lot of mental accounting that goes on in life, your account, my account, all of that type of thing. But when it comes to producing a regular paycheck to the family, you got to step away from the mental accounting thing and think about, okay, we're going to have a lump sum of money here, and we're going to take a withdrawal from that lump sum of money on a regular basis, and we're going to continue on with that through the rest of our life. When one of us dies, the other is going to inherit their money, so it's all ours anyway. And so that holistic approach really does drive the income planning process, Scott. And I think that it's fine to think about that as you're accumulating assets. You got your account, I got my account, all of that type of thing. But when you get to retirement, it all kind of goes in a big pot,
yeah.
Not physically in that pot, but from a planning standpoint in that pot. And then you can create the streams of retirement income that you're looking for.
And here's what I would say to wrap up too, John. It matters much less on whose account, which account you're pulling from, and it matters more on how that account is invested. Because as we've talked about on this show, you want to be pulling your today dollars from a low to no market risk account. That goes back to the bucketing strategy. You can find out more going through the Gen Wealth Ready to Retire process. We can talk about how clients can walk through, or people can walk through that, John, as we get into our final thoughts.
Absolutely. So, you know, Scott, we have dealt with a lot of issues on today's show. One of the things I want everybody to really understand that is that, you know, these things are complex. And the average guy that does investments is really not going to be well-versed in the intricacies of retirement income planning. Retirement income certified professionals, which we've got a slew of on our team, certified financial planners, we've got those on our team as well. Those are the folks that really understand the nuances, the details matter issues of retirement income planning, because it's in the weeds, it's in the details where certain things happen that make a big difference, like understanding the effect of Roth IRA income on the taxation of your Social Security. That's almost a head scratcher in and of itself. But that's just one of the things that working with a professional that is well-trained in retirement income planning can deliver for you in terms of your financial independence.
I would encourage you to find out more, to take the conversation forward from here. There are a couple of ways that I would invite you to do that. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know occasionally we do workshops in the public, and we have many coming up. You can check that out and find out if there's one near you by going to getreadyforthefuture.com/academy to find out if the next workshop is near you, and you can sign up there, always free to attend. And if you're ready to walk through the Gen Wealth Ready to Retire process, I would encourage you to write this phone number down. 866-653-PLAN. 866-653-7526 to begin your journey to true financial independence. And that is all the time we have for this week's show. Our thanks to everybody who sent a question in and we used on the air. And if you'd like to get a question to us, it is very easy to call and leave a voicemail or text us a question at 501-381-5228. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Get Ready for the Future show. If you enjoy hearing from the Gen Wealth team every week, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. And you can always find us on social media. Search for Gen Wealth Financial Advisors on Facebook or on Twitter at Gen Wealth FA. The Gen Wealth Financial team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or call our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Gen Wealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.